My favorite story talks about this young couple. They'd been married 2 or 3 years. Got up on a Saturday morning, had the day free, but before the day had even started, before they even got dressed, they'd had a little spat with each other, and we're just a little, I mean, it wasn't a big deal, just ticked off at one another. And she started getting dressed, and in the process, asked her husband to come across the room and help her with the zipper on the back of her dress. And so he said, sure, I'll help you. He walked across the room, grabbed her zipper, and went zip, 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 and walked away and left it unzipped. Well, she didn't, you know what to do about that, but she finished getting dressed, and they went about the day, and that afternoon, she had gone shopping, came home, pulled in the driveway, and noticed that her husband was under the other car working on it. And, of course, he was half under and half out, and the part that was out was the bottom part. And so she took the groceries out of the car, looked that situation over very carefully, sat the groceries down in the trunk of the car, walked over, reached down, took the zipper on his pants, and went zip, 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 and left them unzipped, thinking that she had gotten revenge now for that morning. Well, she triumphantly picked up her groceries, walked in the house very proudly, realizing what she had the great opportunity to do. She walked in the kitchen, and there was her husband standing there. She said, what are you doing here? What do you mean, what am I doing here? I live here. Well, who is that out under the car? Oh, that's Joe next door. He's helping me fix the car. Well, she quickly told him what had happened, and so they go rushing out the front door to see how Joe's doing. Well, Joe isn't doing very well. When she pulled this little trick with the zipper on his pants, he raised up and hit his head on the bottom of the car and knocked himself out cold, and he was still out. Well, they didn't know what to do. And so finally one of them thought, well, we ought to get some help. So she goes rushing in the house, dials 911, gets the paramedics to come out, and they arrive, two guys in the ambulance, and they get the gurney out, and they see this guy, and they're very gingerly pulling Joe out from underneath the car and trying to get him on the gurney and everything. And in the process of all this, of course, these guys want to know what happened. Well, they got laughing so hard at what had really happened to Joe that they dropped him on the concrete driveway and broke his shoulder. Well, when Joe finally came to and found out all that had happened to him, he ended up, after he got out of the hospital, shoulder in a cast, head bandaged, he ended up suing his neighbors, the ambulance company, and the two paramedics. And went to court, and he won. Now, the moral of that story for us who are married is you got to be very, very careful about those little arguments that develop between you and your wife on Saturday morning. Now, this is Saturday, and your wife isn't here, but there's a lot of Saturdays coming. So if we had the time right now, what I would do is I'd go off on the whole issue of conflict and how we handle conflict in marriage and how it can be a very positive thing in a marriage relationship. But we've got to learn how to resolve them. And guys, whose responsibility do you think it is biblically to resolve conflict when it comes up between you and your wife? Who has the responsibility to initiate, hey, honey, we got to get at the bottom of this and not just keep sweeping it under the rug like we so often do? Whose responsibility biblically do you think that is? Ours. Yeah, it's ours. And yet there are so many things that the Bible talks about that are the responsibility of the husband that we just so often neglect. And the one that we want to talk about this morning is husbands loving your wives. If you got your Bible, turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians 5, verses 22 to the end of the chapter, verse 33, is probably without a doubt the most key passage in the New Testament on the subject of marriage. And it's a very simple thing, and it's also a very practical passage. Now, I say that, but I want you to understand that this is practical, not only because of what it says, but also because of its placement in the book of Ephesians. The book of Ephesians is basically divided into three parts. The first three chapters are very deep theological truth. It's what we as Christians call theology. And it goes way into eternity past and brings us up to date. It goes all through the redemption of Christ, why he came into the world, what that means to us. And the key phrase in the first three chapters is in him or in Christ. What we have because, what we have spiritually because of the fact that we are in Christ. That's the first three chapters in the book of Ephesians. Then in chapter 4, he switches gears, dramatically switches gears, and he goes to very practical stuff. The first three chapters in the book of Ephesians could be entitled The Wealth of the Believer. All the riches, the wealthiness that we have because we are in Christ. The next two plus chapters, 4, 5, and 6 down to about verse 9, talks about our walk. How we are to take all this wonderful wealth that we have and put it into practice on a daily basis. It's the practical aspect of the Christian life which grows out of the deep theology of our position in Christ. And this passage on husbands and wives is right in the middle of that practical section. So this is not theology, although there's a little bit mixed in with it, but it's meant to be put into shoe leather and walked around in every day. That's what the point of this passage is. And then the last few verses of chapter 6 talks about the warfare of the believer. So you got the wealth, the walk, and the warfare of the believer. That's just a very simple outline of the book of Ephesians. Now, the warfare doesn't necessarily have anything to do with marriage. I say necessarily, although some of you may get into that once in a while. So when the Lord talks to us here as husbands in Ephesians chapter 5, 22 to 33, he is talking about things that we need to do that are very, very practical. Now, if you're taking notes, I don't have time to go into this, but right at the end of chapter 3, there's a prayer. And after you get home, what I'd like to have you do is go back over that prayer, verses 14 to the end, and see if there aren't things in that prayer that you need to pray as a husband in order for you to put into practice what he talks about in Ephesians 5, 22 to 33 for you as a husband. This is a very practical prayer. And it's interesting to me that it's really a preface to chapter 4, 5, and 6, 1 to 9. The prayer is a preface. Because there's no doubt in Paul's mind that we can't do any of these things apart from God's help. And so he prays that God will enable us and help us to do those things. So get into that prayer and think about it, meditate on it, study it a little bit, and begin to pick out certain things in it that you need to pray as a husband in order to help you do what's outlined for us here in Ephesians 5. Now, I do want to take the time to read verses 25 through 33 because I want you to see something. The first 22, 23, 24, we may get back to a little bit of that, but I'm not sure that we'll have the time. We're supposed to be done at what time? 11:50, so we got over an hour. Well, we may have time to get to it. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or other blemish, by holy, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives, there it is a second time, as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it just as Christ does the church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself. Third time. And the wife must respect her husband. Now, guys, there are, in this passage, if you started at verse 22, there are two responsibilities that God puts on wives, Christian wives, and there are two responsibilities that he puts on Christian husbands. But there's only one of them that he repeats three times. And that ought to tell us something. And that is, husbands, love your wives. I personally believe, guys, particularly verse 25, I personally believe that this is probably, apart from the commands that are in the New Testament with regards to our relationship to Christ, this is probably the most, next to that, this is probably the most important command in all of the New Testament for a Christian husband. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Now, I don't know how much time you've ever given thinking about that. Husbands, I'm supposed to love my wife in the same way that Christ loves me, loves you, loves everybody who is a part of his church. That is the way I am supposed to love my wife. Now, I don't know whether you thought about that, but man, that is a tall order. In fact, I think it's a lifetime project to learn how to do that, working at it every day. I'll tell you something else that I believe. And this is from experience in my own marriage with my own wife, and also in talking with other couples about this. This whole issue of submission, wives, be in submission to your husbands. If the husband is doing this that is talked about in verse 25, if he is really loving his wife as Christ loves the church, the issue of submission becomes a very minor part of the whole marriage relationship. It hardly even rears its head, because the wife is willing. See, submission in the part of a wife, it's not something she does, it's an attitude she has that flows out of her into her whole life then, and into the relationship that she has with her husband. And we can't get into all that, but I really feel that this is the most important command in all of the Scriptures, next to those that relate to our relationship with Christ, for Christian husbands. And guys, if we can put this into practice and learn how to do it better, day in, day out, week after week, year after year, become more skilled at it in communicating love to our wives, man, it is going to solve so many issues and problems and things that come up in your relationship. It's love your wives as Christ loves the church. Well, how did Christ love the church?
Sacrificially.
All right, sacrificially, certainly. Yeah.
Intimately,
right. Anything else you can think of? Unconditionally, right. What was this? Serve, right? Right? Yeah. That's a good point right there. If you trace the love of God toward man, the love of Christ toward his church through the Scriptures, from Genesis to Revelation, there is one outstanding characteristic about God's love toward us that's always there. Anytime you see in the Scriptures God's love expressed toward mankind or Christ's love expressed toward His church, there is always something that accompanies that. It's action. For God so loved the world that He gave. That's an action word. He did something about His love. John 3:16. Romans 5:8. But this is the one you were probably referring to. But God extended or commended His love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He did something about His love. Anywhere in the Scriptures you find God's love expressed toward man, it is always expressed in terms of actions. Now, what does that say to us? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. You see, love is far more than a feeling. It is a feeling at times, but it's far more than that. Love is a decision. Love is action. Love is something we do, just as Christ did to us. The old Apostle John, over in 1 John 3:18, he had it all figured out. He was writing this letter to a group of people that he knew intimately. He calls them my little children. He says, my little children, let us not love just in speech or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Deed, actions. Put your love into shoe leather. Do something about your love. Love in action. Some of you will be familiar with 1 Corinthians 13. It's a great love chapter in the Bible. And if you go through there and you look at all the verbs that are used to describe love, both positive and negative, you realize that they are words that require doing something. It's not just some way we feel. It's not some high and mighty thought that we have. It's right where we live. It's putting shoe leather action to our love. There's a little book written by Henry Drummond. If you've never read it, you ought to get a hold of it, called The Greatest Thing in the World. It's just a little booklet. You can read it through in less than an hour. And it's an exposition of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And right at the end of it, Dr. Drummond says this: in order to be loving, act loving. It's that simple. In order to be loving, act loving. But you know, I have guys come to me from time to time, and we'll be talking about their marriage relationship. That's why they've come. And they'll say, eventually, they get around and they say, Jack, I just don't love her anymore. I've lost all my feelings of love. And we talk about that and kind of draw it out and get to talking. But I always get around asking this question: when was the last time you did something that was loving toward your wife? You did something. You put action to love. You did a loving act. When was the last time you did that? Well, you know, they kind of look up at the ceiling. Oh, boy. And usually the scenario goes, well, maybe 6 months ago. Maybe a year ago. See, what they're looking for often is a feeling. And the feeling has gone. Someone said, you don't feel your way into acting, you act your way into feeling. You don't feel your way into acting, you act your way into feeling. In other words, you perform an act of love and the feelings will come trailing along. The feelings, many times, are not just going to be there all on their own. Something has to happen to create them. Let me give you an illustration. A number of years ago, it was a Friday afternoon. It had been a terrible week at the office. Things were left undone. I'm a perfectionist. Friday afternoon, I like things tied up nice and neat little packages. Decisions that need to be made are made, and projects wrapped up, or at least I know where the end is, it's in sight. But this was one of those weeks where nothing was accomplished. I mean, from my point of view, it was just dangling ends all over the place. And when I walked out of the office, to head home that night. And Carol and I were going to have the whole weekend together by ourselves, which is kind of unusual anyway. And I had in my heart what we call at our house a DRA, a dirty, rotten attitude. And I knew that if I went home with this DRA, I could not only put a damper on Friday night, but the whole weekend, and we'd have a miserable time. And I didn't want that to happen, but I didn't know what to do. So as I climbed into the car down in the parking lot, I just kind of tried to pull my feelings together by my own bootstraps and say, now, Jack, you are going to feel good. Well, it didn't work. So as I pulled out of the parking lot, I just shot up a word of prayer. Lord, help me. I don't know what to, I don't want to go home feeling this way. And it's about a 15-minute drive home. Well, almost instantly after I had put that prayer into words, an idea popped into my mind. And it was such a terrific idea, I knew it had to be right straight from the portals of heaven. The idea was this. Stop at the Hallmark store at the Mall of the Bluffs and get Carol a little gift. Well, I thought it was a terrific idea. The only problem was there was no occasion for a gift. I mean, this was early November. Her birthday was past. Our anniversary was past. Christmas was way down the road. Thanksgiving wasn't too far away, but it's still a little even early for Thanksgiving. And so there was no reason to get her a gift. But I thought, well, I'm going to do it anyway. So I get out to the Mall of Bluffs, pull in the parking lot there by the Hallmark store, and begin to walk in. And when I walk in the Hallmark store, just walking through the door, I begin to feel differently inside. And I didn't want to spend a lot of money, but I wanted to get something for Carol that I knew she would like. And so I looked. I took about 10 minutes, and I looked around and to find just the right thing. And I finally came across it. It was three red candles, each of them about 2 inches in diameter, each a different height, and a little piece of green fuzz around the bottom. It was a centerpiece for Christmas, and I knew she'd love it. So I told them what I wanted, and they got the box for it and put it in the box, and I said, hey, could you gift wrap that? Oh, sure. And in the meantime, I'd picked out a card to go with it. I paid for it. Walked out of the Hallmark store, and it was almost like I was floating. The DRA was almost totally gone. And by the time I climbed in the car and had 5 more minutes to the house, by the time I pulled in the garage, man, I was so excited about giving Carol this little gift, and the DRA had totally dissipated. And I walked in the house. She greeted me at the door warmly with a hug and a kiss, as she always does. And I gave her this little thing, and she says, what's this for? Honey, it's just because I love you. Oh, man, she almost melted. Good night. And we had a delightful weekend together. Now, what happened? Well, I didn't feel loving when I left the office. Anything but loving. I had a dirty, rotten attitude that could have affected the whole weekend, our relationship. I'd have gone home and kicked the dog and, all that sort of stuff. But I did an act of love. I did something loving. And the feelings of love crushed totally the DRA. And they came trailing along, and it changed the whole demeanor of my heart inside. I challenge you to try that sometime. Next time you've got the equivalent in your household of a DRA, and you're heading home, and you don't want to put a damper on the thing, do something loving. It doesn't have to be a gift, but figure out some creative way to do something loving, and you'll find that the feelings of love then will come trailing along. You don't feel your way into acting. You act your way into loving. Love is a decision. Probably the best illustration I have ever come across, if I can find it here someplace, of love in action
I came across in Reader's Digest. Reader's Digest is a tremendous source. I want to read you this little story because it illustrates exactly what we're talking about now. This guy is writing. He's a businessman. He says, I made a vow to myself on the drive down to the vacation beach cottage. For 2 weeks, I would try to be a loving husband and father. Totally loving. No ifs, ands, or buts. The idea had come to me as I was listening to a communicator on my car's tape player. He was quoting a biblical passage about husbands being thoughtful of their wives. Then he went on to say, love is an act of the will. Wow. A person can choose to love. Guys, that's why in our book, Marriage Takes More Than Love, every chapter talks about a choice that we can make in our marriage relationship. Love is a choice we make. To myself, I had to admit that I had been a selfish husband, that our love had been dulled by my own insensitivity. In petty ways, really, chiding Evelyn for her tardiness, insisting on the TV channel I wanted to watch, throwing out day-old newspapers that I knew Evelyn still wanted to read. Well, for 2 weeks, all that was going to change. And it did. Right from the moment I kissed Evelyn at the door and said, man, that new yellow sweater really looks great on you. Oh, Tom, you noticed, she said, surprised and pleased. Maybe a little perplexed. After the long drive, I wanted to sit and read. Evelyn suggested a walk on the beach. I started to refuse, but then I thought, hey, Evelyn's been alone here with the kids all week, and now she wants to be alone with me. So we walked on the beach while the kids flew their kites. So it went. 2 weeks of not calling the Wall Street investment firm where I was a director. A visit to the Shell Museum, though I usually hate museums, and I enjoyed it. Holding my tongue while Evelyn's getting ready made us late for a dinner date. Relaxed and happy, that's how the whole vacation passed. I made a new vow to keep on remembering to choose love. There was one thing that went wrong with my little experiment, however. Evelyn and I still laugh about it today. On the last night at the cottage, preparing for bed, Evelyn stared at me with the strangest expression on her face. What's the matter? I asked her. Tom, she said in a voice filled with distress. Do you know something I don't? What do you mean? Well, that checkup I had several weeks ago, our doctor, did he tell you something about me? Tom, you've been so good to me these 2 weeks. Am I dying? It took a moment for it all to sink in, and then I burst out laughing. No, honey, I said, wrapping her in my arms, you're not dying. I'm just beginning to live. And guys, that is our objective in loving our wives, is to really begin to live. To live life to the full in our marriage relationship by learning how to love our wives as Christ loved the church. That's our goal. And guys, I repeat, that's a lifetime project to learn how to do that. There are none of us smart enough that we can figure that out in a week or a month. We just got to keep hacking away at it and praying over it and asking God for new ideas and fresh ways to express in actions our love to our wives. Now, how can we do that in a practical way? Let me suggest three things. Can you put this thing up here on that little board? Now, you guys in the back can't read this, what is in blue up here, but it says, every day I aim to do these three things. Now, I've underlined every day, not once a week, not once a month, or whenever I feel like it, but every day I aim to do these three things in relation to my wife. Number one, tell her I love her. Excuse me. I'm getting hot. But leave her dancing on air and gasping for breath. Go hang yourself. No, 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 no. I mean, I love you. I love you. Sorry, that's another sermon. It's amazing to me how hard it is for some husbands to get those words out. I heard about this one guy. He said, look, I told her I loved her when I married her. When I change my mind, I'll let her know. That just doesn't do it. There is something about the makeup of most women. I can't say all, but most women, most wives, where they constantly need the reassurance from us that we love them. And it needs to be spoken. We need to say it. And so I have taken this on. This is one of my husband projects. Every day to tell Carol that I love her. Sometime during the day, you know, it doesn't have to be a romantic situation. Just, you know, I'll put my arm around her shoulder and look her in the eye and say, honey, I love you. And then, you know, we part ways and go on. Just, or sometimes it can be a romantic situation. You know, you walk in from work and she's there by the sink or the stove and she's got a drop of perspiration coming off the end of her nose and she's busy getting dinner, and you walk up behind her, put your arms around her waist, and then slowly turn her around, look deep into her eyes and say, honey, I love you. And then give her a real backbender. And then just walk away. Man.
What did you do?
Yeah, what did you do? What happened? Every day I aim to tell her I love her. I heard about this one guy. His wife had been nagging him a little bit about this, and I know that's not a good idea, but some wives do that. About saying it. Just say it. I love. Say it once in a while. Well, finally, he went down the basement. He's got a little wood shop, woodworking shop down the basement. He went down the basement, got a neat piece of wood, and cut it just the right size, got his burning tool out and said, I love you, burned that on the piece of wood in a real nice script, put a coat of paint on it that would match the kitchen, put a hook on the back of it, took it upstairs, hung it over the kitchen sink, and then went and got his wife, and he brought her into the kitchen, and he says, now, there, does that do it? Well, for today, yeah. But not from then on forever. Every day I aim to tell her I love her. Number two, every day I aim to do something nice for her. Now that gets tough. Words are cheap. But this takes action. This takes thought. This takes creativity. And some of us are not too strong in those areas. We need to think. And someone has said, think. There is so little competition. but we need to learn how to think about this. Now, I'm not talking about big deals or expensive things. I'm talking about just little things that you can do that will communicate by your actions to your wife that you care. You're saying, in essence, I love you. For instance, how many of you guys have a do list? A honey do list, you know. Honey, would you please do that?
Anymore.
Yeah, it ain't honey anymore. I don't know. That's bad news. All right, how many of you are all caught up on that right now? Okay.
We can change the list.
Yeah, well, you got to stay on top of those things. You know, it was several years ago that I just, a little incident happened that finally made me realize how important that was to Carol. Carol is not mechanically inclined at all. You know, I don't say this facetiously, but I have taught her how to change the bulb in a lamp. But she's just not gifted in those areas. She's gifted in many, many others that I'm not. So it's my responsibility around the house to take care of little things, and so she usually has something going that she wants me to do. Well, several years ago, it was probably 3 or 4 years after we had moved into this house, and in the master bedroom, there were two very narrow windows, probably about that wide, right next to each other with a strip of wall in between them. And the way we covered those with a drape was the kind that you pull a cord and it kind of folds up, and then you wrap the cord around a hook in the wall. Well, one of the hooks on one of those windows had come loose, and it was just hanging there by one part of one screw, maybe a couple of threads. And she had asked me to fix that. She had asked me several times to fix that. She had asked me several times over a period of months to fix that. And I just never got around to it. I had a good reason, parenthesis, excuses, because she always did that. I was usually up before she was, and so she'd get up later and pull the drape up. And so it really, you know, wasn't anything that I had to worry about, I thought. Well, one Saturday morning, I slept in. I got up, putzing around, still in my pajamas, and that window was right there by the sink, and so I pulled the drape up and started to wrap the cord around the hook. Well, it was almost an impossible job with only two hands. So I looked at the situation. That's terrible. So I looked it over, realized what I needed to fix it, tromped two floors down the basement, got the tools and one of these little plastic deals you pound on the wall to put a screw in, came back up, pounded it in, put the screw back in, fixed it, took the tools back downstairs, came back up, and went about the day. I didn't time it at the time, but my guess is it didn't take me any more than 10 or 12 minutes to do that, including two trips up and down the stairs to the basement. Well, the next morning, I got up early, was sitting downstairs in our family room, having my quiet time, and our bedroom floor squeaks, and it's above the family room, and so I knew that Carol was up, and she and I, we have a totally different approach. We're so different in many ways, and even the way we start our day. I start very quietly, sit down there, have a cup of coffee, get awake, then maybe eventually I get around to have my quiet time, read my Bible and praying. But when she gets up, man, she hits the floor, and it's 60 miles an hour right from go. Swish, swish, swish. So when she hits the floor, I could hear the floor squeaking. And she was going around, moving, getting dressed, getting her makeup on, and I could kind of sense exactly what was going on up there simply by where the squeaks on the floor were, you know, around the bedroom. And then all of a sudden, it got quiet. No more squeaks. And then I hear this shriek from upstairs. You fixed it! And she came running downstairs, threw her arms around me, and gave me a hug and a kiss. That's when I knew how important that honey-do list was to her and what it communicated to her. Little things, guys. Do something nice for her every day. I'm not creative. I have to work hard at this. This is not something that just comes naturally to me. And every once in a while, I really come up with a jewel. Two or three times a year, maybe. But I try to do something for her every day that's nice, and I know she... But to be creative, you know, to do something really kind of out of the ordinary. One time I had accepted a speaking engagement... back in the Midwest. We live in Colorado Springs. And when I put it in my date book, months ahead, it just didn't dawn on me that it was July the 25th, and that's her birthday. Well, we, you know, birthdays and anniversaries and so forth, they're pretty important around our house. But it somehow it just slipped my mind. I just didn't think about it until several weeks before I was to leave. And when it finally dawned on me, I went to Carol and put my arms around her, gave her a hug and a kiss, and I said, "Honey, I am really sorry. I just didn't realize it." And she said, "Well, don't worry about it. I know it." But I wanted to figure out something really special to do to make up for that, other than just the ordinary run-of-the-mill gift and a card, huh? Something really great. And I couldn't. I thought I tried to come. And I'd come up with an idea, and, "Oh, that won't work. That's no good." So Saturday morning, I had to leave on an early morning flight. Got up, was putzing around in the bathroom and shaving, and and I happened to glance down at the Formica countertop, and there was her eyebrow pencil laying there. Got an idea. I picked up the eyebrow pencil, wrote in the mirror, "Happy birthday, I love you." Or no, first of all, I just scribbled on it, and then took a piece of Kleenex and see if it'd come off easy, and it did. And then I wrote... Then I wrote, "Happy birthday, I love you." And I stood back and I looked at that and I thought, "Man, Mayall, that is a terrific idea." So I picked up the little soap dish sitting there on the Formica counter, and underneath it I wrote, "Happy birthday, I love you." And then I set the soap dish down on top of it, knowing that sometime during the weekend she'd find it. She'd move the soap dish and find the "Happy birthday, I love you." Well, then I got carried away. On the shower door, glass shower door, "Happy birthday, I love you." Then I took it downstairs in the kitchen on the microwave door, glass, "Happy birthday, I love you." On the TV screen, "Happy birthday, I love you." And then I went back upstairs, woke her up, and she groggily got up, and she was going to take me to the airport, and walked through the house, didn't see any of this. I got back on Monday afternoon. She picked me up at the airport, threw her arms around me, gave me a hug and a kiss, and she absolutely raved about the "Happy birthday, I love you" that she found all over the house. And then eventually she got around to thanking me for the gift and the card. But it was that really communicated love to her. Just some simple little idea like it. It didn't cost me a cent, just a little bit of stuff off of her eyebrow pencil, you know. Here's one I haven't tried yet, but some guy, the last time I talked on this subject, some guy came up to me afterwards and he says, "Jack, try this sometime." So I'll pass it on to you guys. Whatever your wife likes, maybe a teddy bear, you know, just something that isn't expensive, but that you can put in the freezer, like a teddy bear or a ceramic little deal or something, you know, that putting it in the freezer won't hurt it, but you know she'll love it. Wrap it up in foil and then just put it in the freezer. And put on it, inside the foil, "Honey, I love you." Someday she's going to find that. Huh? Someday she's going to find it. Now, like I said, I haven't tried that. I'm going to do that, though. I've only known about that for about a month, so I'll pass it on to you. So every day, I aim to do something nice for her. Now, guys, there are not very many things in a marriage relationship where it's healthy to have competition between you and your wife. Not very many things. But this is one you can. To try and outdo each other on doing... Yeah. At this point, she's got the cake. I got up one morning real early, and I had to go to a meeting or something, and I was groggily putzing around and finally got around to going in the bathroom and I do my little chore, and I lifted the seat on the toilet. And there, floating in the water... was a red rose. I knew what it meant. "I love you." I to this day, she's never told me how she did it. I don't know when she did it, but sometime after we went to bed and before I got up, she figured out a way to get that rose in there. Isn't that great? Huh? Isn't that great?
Did you save it or flush it?
You know, I don't remember what I did with it, but I know I didn't flush it. So every day I aim to do something nice for her. Every day. And it just, you know, little things. Third thing, every day I aim to pay her a compliment. Honey, that was a great meal. Thanks. When's the last time you did that? She gets home from the beauty parlor. Hair looks fantastic. Sweetheart, man, you look great. Or she's been cleaning the house all day. Boy, the house looks great. Honey, you're doing a terrific job with the kids. Oh, I really appreciate you're taking care of all my dirty clothes. See, these gals do so many routine things for us that we just neglect thanking them for. But a word of appreciation is, it means so much. Just saying thank you. I cut out an article in a local paper some time ago written by a pastor about this subject, about paying people compliments. He says, family life holds together on the thin thread of praise and commendation. Unhappily, we have a way of withholding expressions of appreciation and gratitude from those nearest to us. In Vermont, so the story runs, a tight-lipped husband finally said to his wife, when I think of how much you have meant to me all these years, it is almost more than I can do sometimes to keep from telling you so. Terrible. Absolutely terrible. He goes on to talk about Thomas Carlyle, a well-known writer of both prose and poetry. And it says that one of the deep regrets of Thomas Carlyle was his failure to tell his wife, Jane, how much he loved her and appreciated her, her constant loyalty and encouragement. Now, there's more to it than that. I came across another article on Thomas Carlyle. Let me read it to you. It's just very brief. Thomas Carlyle was perceived as a tough, blunt, unfeeling man, but underneath that facade was a man who saw himself as affectionate and loving. He was what the Bible calls a self-deceived man. How about you? How do you perceive yourself? In a few minutes, we're going to get to a little project that I want to assign you as to how your wife perceives you. Because sometimes we get a totally out of whack view of ourselves, which is what he did. He perceived himself as affectionate and loving. He dearly loved his wife, but was never able to express that love to her convincingly. He simply traveled through his marriage assuming she knew what was going on in his heart. I have learned over the years, guys, that probably 85 or 90% of the time I make an assumption I'm wrong. And that's what he did. He made an assumption. And he was wrong. He was dead wrong. His biographer says that when Carlyle's wife died, he became distraught. He became obsessed with trying to find out whether she knew how much he had loved her. He found her diaries and started reading them, hoping he'd find comments about their relationship. He was horrified when he discovered she didn't have the slightest sense of his feeling for her. She died believing she was totally unloved. In fact, the only comments he did find about their relationship centered on her resentment of his temper. The discovery almost killed him. And he lived his life wishing his wife could return for just 5 minutes so he could pour out his love to her. And after that, here is what he wrote. What silences we keep year after year with those who are near to us and dear, till out of sight and out of reach they go, these dear familiar friends who loved us so. We think with vain regret of some kind word that once we might have said, and they have heard. But it's too late. She was gone. The moral of this, guys, is if you like it, say so. It's that simple. If you like it, say so. Whatever you see that she has done, or how she looks, or some attitude she had, if you like it, say so. Speak up. Be a complimenter. You know, we got too few of those in the world. People who are encouragers or complimenters. But we as husbands ought to be that for our wives. Every day I aim to pay her a compliment. To tell her I love her, to do something nice for her, and to pay her a compliment. Every day. Every day. All right, still on the subject of husbands loving your wives. Let me ask you guys a question. Are you fun to live with?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Good. You ought to be. You see, we as husbands have the responsibility to set the atmosphere in our home. Set the tone. Well, that tone partially ought to be having fun. It ought to be enjoyable. Some fathers and husbands have the knack of kind of keeping the family on the edge of what's dad going to do next that's going to be terrific. Now, that takes thought. It takes creativity. Some guys it's natural with, but most of us it isn't. It's something we got to work at. But guys, that is one of the two primary elements in a good marriage, is working at it. We've got to work at it. We've got to work at it. We've got to work at our marriage. We've got to give it priority. The other thing is giving God His rightful place in our marriage. He invented it. He's got ideas for us. That's why we need to get into the book, what Sandy talked about this morning. That's why we need to get into the Bible. He's got stuff to tell us about how we can be better husbands. And it may not be a passage that has anything to do with marriage. It's just a good biblical principle. Hey, put this into practice and it'll help your marriage. Every day, quiet time. It's going to help your marriage. It's going to help you become a better husband. It's going to teach you how to love your wife as Christ loved the church. In a successful marriage, our daughter had it in a high school class she took. It says, one of the most important characteristics of a marriageable person is the habit of happiness. It would be impossible to overestimate the value of cultivating this trait in oneself and of seeking it in a marriage partner. Proverbs puts it this way in 17:22, a cheerful heart is a good medicine, but a downcast spirit dries up the bones. So we need to work at this matter of a cheerful spirit. Now, how do you do that? You've had a lousy day at the office. You're going home with a DRA. Oh, I heard about one guy. He said, when I'm like that, all my taking my problems home from work, there's a big high telephone pole right at the corner where I turn to go to our house, and I just kind of hang all of them right there on that telephone pole. All my problems, hang them there on the telephone pole, and I go on home. And then the next morning when I go to work, I take them off the telephone pole and take them back with me. The Bible has a lot better answer than that. Much better than a telephone pole. Casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. He wants to take those burdens. And don't forget, an act of love can go a long way toward getting rid of the DRA. A cheerful heart is characterized by laughter. A lot of laughter in your house? You know how to laugh? You know how to laugh at yourself. Whether you realize it or not, you are a very funny person. You do really dumb things that other people want around you, they'd like to laugh at. But in your home, do they have that prerogative? Do they have that freedom? Is there that kind of a spirit in your home where from time to time when Dad pulls one that is really out to lunch, can the kids and your wife laugh at you without you getting mad or upset? In fact, you kind of join in with them. Laughter is a good medicine. It really creates an atmosphere that's free and easy and fun in the home. Learn to laugh. Okay. Let me ask you another question. This is the red thing down here. You guys back there can't read it, but I'll... The first line says, by my actions, and I want you to write this down, by my actions, how would my wife list these six items in order of priority in my life? Now, let me give you the six things, and I'll repeat the question. The first one is any ministry that I may be involved in. Any ministry I may be involved in. The second one is my relationship to God. The third one is my job. Number four, my wife. Number five, my children. Number six, my favorite hobby or sport. Now the question is to go to your wife and say, honey, as you observe me in action over, say, a period of 2 weeks to a month, how would you list these things, these six things, in order of priority in my life? And I want you to be honest with me. It takes courage to do that, guys. And you may not be in the kind of relationship with your wife at this point where you could do this. But I'll tell you one thing, it'll sure be revealing. Time after time, when Carol and I have talked to wives about this on an individual basis, and we've asked them this, time after time, the thing that they list at the top of their husband's priority list is number six, his favorite hobby or sport, golf, fishing, hunting, whatever it might be. Because from their point of view, whenever he has discretionary time to use as he wants to, man, that's what he gravitates to. He's either doing it, reading about it, talking to a buddy about it. Or some guys, you know, it's their job. They're why, oh, my husband is so absorbed in his job, he can't even think about anything else. Now, these are all mixed up. These, the way I've got them listed here, they're not in any order of priority. But from a biblical point of view, what should be number one out of those six? Relationship with God. That's right. That's what this conference is all about. To help us get that in the right perspective and how to do it in an effective and meaningful way. That's why we're here. So we can get a lot of ideas this weekend on doing that and really making that number one. Now, let me explain something. When I use the word priority here, I am not talking about time. Priority doesn't necessarily have anything to do with time. And so, you know, obviously, the time that you give to the development and maintaining and ongoing of your relationship to God is not going to take near as much time as some other things that are further down in the priority list. But so time is not really the factor. It's what's important in our makeup, in our minds, in our hearts, and how that is expressed outwardly. All right, biblically then, what should be number two? Wife, right. No question about that, is there? Well, from her standpoint, when you talk to her, is that what she's going to say? It would sure be interesting to know, wouldn't it? Now, some of you I know, you already know. You know. You're doing everything I've been talking about plus. And you got a relationship that's tremendous. And that is super. But you know something? Carol and I go all over the country teaching this marriage seminar. But we try every other year to go to some other seminar or conference or something on the subject of marriage so we can learn. We haven't got it all put together yet. We realize there's things out there that we can pick up on that'll just increase that relationship between the two of us and God even more. In fact, we heard Norm Wright one time at a seminar up in Denver. And Norm Wright, I don't know whether you know who he is, but he's Mr. Marriage Counselor. He's written about 50 books on the subject of marriage and engagement and so forth and counseling on the subject of marriage. And he was interviewing a young engaged couple that he had got permission from to interview in front of us. There were about probably 15 couples of us. And this was his first marriage counseling session with them. He was going to continue it, but he got their permission to do this in public. And we felt very privileged to be able to sit in on this. And eventually he got around to asking him this question. He says, you know, I have people come into my office for marriage counseling, and they're ready to get a divorce. And they tell me all kinds of things that have gone wrong. So the thing I'd like to ask you as a couple is, what makes you think you're going to make it? What makes you think you're going to make it? Well, and they started giving them the same answers you and I would give them. Oh, we love each other. Okay, that's great. What else? Well, we believe that God is really in this. He's brought us together. Great. What else? And he kept asking this, what else? What else? Until, you know, they ran out of gas. They couldn't come up with any more answers. He says, these couples that come into my office, he says, they've said all the same things you said. At one time, they said that to each other. And here they are ready to get a divorce. He says, let me give you two tips that if you put into practice year in and year out, I guarantee you it'll take you a long way down the road to making your marriage last. Well, of course, all of us were sitting on the edge of our seats waiting to hear what these two things were, and we said, we all of us, without exception, were expecting some two great dynamic ideas that nobody had ever heard of before. Number one, never stop dating. You dated before you got married? Never stop dating. That means just the two of you getting out of the house, going out together and doing something where you can communicate with each other. Have some fun, do something exciting and fun, but make sure you've got some time just to sit and eyeball to eyeball talk. Number two, every year put money and time into your budget to attend some kind of marriage seminar. Well, you know, Carol and I were just about blown away. We preach those things all the time. We do the marriage seminar. And we even, as I said, we try to go to something different so that we can learn. That's why we were at Norm Wright's conference. But, and we've dated, we've practiced this thing of dating ever since we've been married. And guys, it works. It works. You know, okay, so there's no marriage seminar available to you. What do you do? I mean, there's not anything in your area. Well, get a hold of a good tape or a series of tapes on marriage. Take a couple of days on a weekend. Get off, the two of you, in a motel. Just the two of you. Take your tape player along and listen together and then talk about it and interact on it. That's a married seminar, or the equivalent thereof. Or get a good book on marriage and do the same thing. Just get away, the two of you, and read it to each other out loud. In fact, if you get our book, Marriage Takes More Than Love, Carol has written some chapters and I have written some chapters. Well, when you read it out loud, you guys read the chapters to your wife that I've written and have your wife read out loud to you the chapters Carol has written and then talk about it. I mean, we could come up with all kinds of things. So those were the two things. Okay, number one should be my relationship to God. Number two, my wife. What should be number three biblically?
Children.
And from there, it kind of gets blurry in the Scripture, depending upon our circumstances and situation at the time. But those three, there's no question about it. My relationship to God, my relationship to my wife, and my relationship to my kids. But guys, I challenge you this week sometime, or next week, to sit down with your wife and ask her, tell her exactly what you want. Honey, through your set of eyeballs, as you observe me in action, and have these six things written out, I want you to look over this list, and you tell me, from your point of view, what do you think is number one, number two, number three, number four, number five, number six in my life? And, you know, it may lead to some things that will lead you into a very interesting discussion, and you may need to make some adjustments in the way you use your time. But man, it'll go a long way down the road to making you more effective as a husband in your own relationship with your wife. One other thing, and then we're running out of time. Still on husbands loving your wives. In the course of everyday living, we as husbands need to communicate to our wives the fact that next to God Himself, they are number one in our thoughts. Underline the word thoughts. But next, that we need to communicate to them in a lot of little ways, that next to, just in the everyday affairs of life, that next to God Himself, they are number one in our thoughts. Well, how do we do that? Okay, let's just say supper is at 6 o'clock. Pretty standard operating procedure here at 6 o'clock. About 2 in the afternoon, you realize, hey, you're going to get stuck at your job. You're not going to get home by 6. What do you do? Sure. You find a phone. You give her a call. It takes about 30 seconds. You say, honey, look, I'm getting tied up. I'm not going to make it home in time for supper at 6. Could you delay it till 7? I'll be there by 6:45. What does that say to her? You're thinking about her. What if you don't call and you show up at 6:45?
You're a deep kimchi.
It communicates something entirely different, doesn't it? You weren't thinking about her. Supposing you got a whole evening together and you're going to watch TV. And it's Monday night. In the fall. And she hates football. Now, I know some wives could tolerate that, but you heard about the guy who, the beginning of football season, walked over to the TV set, just about ready to turn on. He says, now, honey, is there anything you want to tell me before football season starts? Some wives don't laugh at that. You're going to buy a new piece of furniture. Who lives with the furniture in your house more, you or her? She does. So you find yourself getting into a big fat argument over whether it's going to be a blue chair or a burgundy chair. And she likes the blue. And you both love the chair. It's just a matter of the color. Who wins? She ought to. She lives with it longer than you do. You've already agreed you love the chair. It's just a question of color. Man, honey, you like blue. Let's get blue. What's that say to her? You're preferring her, see? That's a lot of little things that happen in life. We have an opportunity to do that. And guys, what that does is it communicates to them that they know then that when the chips are down, when the emergency situation arises, you're going to be thinking about them. They can count on you. They've got that confidence and assurance in you that they can count on you. Let me read you an illustration that is the absolute opposite of that. It's a negative illustration of how a husband can absolutely blow it in this kind of a situation. This is out of Charlie Shedd's book, Letters to Philip. And if you've never read that book, guys, you ought to get a copy of it and read it through once a year, every year. There's always something new you can pick up. Charlie is a tremendous writer. He's funny. He's pointed. He's practical. He's just terrific. Charlie Shedd, S-H-E-D-D, Letters to Philip. And what it is, it's a series of letters that he wrote to his son, Philip, just before Philip was to get married. The subtitle is How to Treat a Woman.
It's also Letters to Karen, right?
Yes. Letters to Karen is the same thing to his daughter just before she got married, and you ought to buy one for your wife. You don't read hers, and she doesn't read yours. Her expectations will get too high of you, and vice versa. Okay? Charlie Shedd. One of the greatest thrills Carol and I have ever had in meeting someone was running into Charlie one time at a conference and getting to spend about 10 minutes with him and talking to him. Man, you talk about a saint of God and just a tremendous person. We felt very privileged just to shake his hand and chat with him for a few minutes. He says, let me present one of the prize illustrations of why women cut their wrists and drown themselves in bathtubs. It's also why they leave notes that read, Dear John, I've gone away with Herbert. Goodbye. Fortunately, that didn't happen here, but some women are made of very stern stuff. This one was. She came into my study looking for all the world like she just dedicated her life to getting even. The reason she looked that way is that she had just dedicated her life to getting even. She had been in an automobile accident 5 days before. Now, some women go all to pieces at times like this. Others, bless their hearts, experience a sudden rush of good judgment. So, being one of the latter and a dutiful wife, as soon as she could, she phoned her husband. Now, what should a man do first if that happens?
How are you?
Sure. That's not what he did. Instead, he asked, how much damage did it do to the car? Well, it was practically a new Oldsmobile. Query number two was, whose fault was it? Well, you know that we all sound unsure of ourselves part of the time, and particularly when our nerves are shattered. So since her answers did not quite suit him, he gave her explicit instructions. Obviously one of those guys who thinks of all the angles except the right one. His third offering was this little gem. Listen, darling, do not admit one thing. You phone the insurance company and I'll call a lawyer. You understand what I mean? She understood. Then to show you that even an idiot can do some things right, he added, just a minute and I'll give you the insurance man's phone number. Thank you so much, she said. Aren't there any more questions? No, he replied. I think that about covers it. Oh, does it? She shouted. Well, just in case you're interested, I'm in the hospital with 5 broken ribs. Question. How can a man effectively say, I'm sorry, after he has pulled one like that? No way. Not effectively. Of course, I suppose in his behalf it should be noted that he knew the accident wasn't fatal, dead wives do not make phone calls. Now see, what communicated to that wife was that she was somewhere down on his priority list underneath the new Oldsmobile. How far down, she wasn't sure. But she was certainly not number one. So it's those kinds of situations where on the daily basis we let our wives know that we're thinking about them. And then they know when something like that happens, they can count on us. One more little story that's just the opposite. When the new car was sideswiped on a trip to the supermarket, Mary Branson stopped and tearfully fumbled in the glove compartment for the insurance papers. Attached to them, she found an envelope with her name on it in her husband's handwriting. "Dear Mary," the note said, "when you need these papers, remember, it's you I love, not the car." When I tell that, read that little incident, and there are wives in the audience, many of them burst into tears because they've never had that kind of thing happen to them. But they'd love to. Huh? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Again, I repeat, in my opinion, that is the most important command in the New Testament for Christian husbands, next to those commands that have to do with our relationship to Christ. You see, I have never heard of nor been involved with a man on his deathbed who said, "Boy, I wish I'd have spent more time at the office." No. It's always, "Oh man, I wish I'd have spent more time with my son or my daughter or my wife or my family." Now, guys, we've got the chance to do that, to get our priorities squared away, to get them straight. And see, I really believe that when we get the glory and all the awards and so forth are going to be handed out, that there's going to be a top prize for husbands who have really made their marriage a priority and done it right, or as right as they knew how to do. Because you see, guys, marriage is important to God. He invented it. He brought it into being. It's His idea. And therefore, we need to give priority to that which is a priority in God's heart. Yeah. Okay, we got about 5 minutes. Any questions? Big deal, huh? Yeah, yeah. 47. Yeah. Yes. It is, and you can get it by writing to Glen Airy, their tape department. I don't think they have it on video, but they do have it on audio. Yes?
What about when you've got a 5 or 6-year-old, you know, all the good things that you might do for your wife, and then just one or two little 5 or 6-year-old boys, wild ones, they'll take all that away. You know, all the good, and then boom, fury.
Huh. What kind of things would he do that would...
She's watching her favorite show, I'm reading in the living room, he comes in walking down the hall at an important minute, Mommy, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't care so much about what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, I see. I think in where you've got kids in the house, young children especially, you're going to have to figure out how to do these things we've been talking about. In a situation where the kids are doing something else, they're off away, or they're sleeping, or they're in school, or whatever, and so that it really does communicate to your wife, hey, this is me and you?
We fall in love every time we're alone. But when Jacob's around,
yeah,
you know, it's real tense.
Yeah. Well, just remember that Jacob is going to grow up.
Yeah, amen.
And things will change. Yeah, yes.
How can you, when your wife tells you something and wants to encourage you to do something, maybe a little more loving, to say something more often, whatever it may be, I think as a guy, we tend to take that as an accusation. And you know, just a struggle. I know, you know, I'm engaged right now, not married yet, but I know it's already happened many times. And so I'm anticipating more. But how can I say, okay, I know she loves me and she's saying it because she loves me. How can I get beyond the finger pointing that I feel and turn it around and really respond and effectively turn around and do something about it?
Let me tell you what happened to us. Right after we got married, I would come home from work, and she would be there and greet me and throw her arms around me and give me a hug and a kiss. And I didn't know how to handle that. I really, at that point in my life, I would kind of stand there like a telephone pole and just the casual kind of affection showing. My wife came from a family that hugging and kissing was the norm. That's the way they expressed appreciation and thanks for anything done by them of another member of the family. It was a hug and a kiss. My family was just the opposite. I knew my folks loved me, but they expressed it in different ways. And affection was not something that was very common in our house. I can never remember my dad hugging me, for instance, when I was growing up. Mom, once in a while, when I'd hurt myself, and she'd pull me up on the lap and give me a hug. So when Carol and I got married, she came from that background. She was a very affectionate person. I was rather standoffish. Well, this went on for quite a while. In fact, the thing that probably opened my mind to it, we're going to go a little over time, because I want to tell you this, that really opened my mind to it was the first Christmas we went up to her house for Christmas. And we had gone together and gotten a Christmas present for each person who was going to be there. Her mom and dad, her older brother, younger sister, an aunt and an uncle, and one or two cousins were going to be there. Well, it came to be present opening time, and her brother, sitting across the room from us, opened our present. And he ripped the paper off, made this giant exclamation about how much he appreciated this. Man, it's a great gift. He jumps up out of his seat, roars across the room, grabs Carol up off the couch, gives her a great big hug and a kiss. Guess who was next in line? Worst Christmas I've ever gone through. Because it was like that the whole time we were up there. From the whole family. And man, I just didn't know how to handle it. Well, we got home, and this went on, this pattern. I'd come home from work, she'd be there to greet me, and finally I realized, we've got a problem, but I'm not sure what to do about it. So after supper one night, I brought it up. I said, honey, you are a far more affectionate person than I am. And I don't know what to do about that, but I'm beginning to believe that it's bothering you that I don't respond to you. Now, you know, the bedroom is a different thing. That's a whole other ballgame. And I had no problem there. But this just casual affection showing. So as we talked about it, I realized I got just a little inkling. This grew and grew and grew over the years, but I got a little inkling of the fact that this was something she needed from me. It wasn't just some fad, but she actually needed the show of affection, the hugging and the kissing from me in a casual way. That was part of her makeup. So as a result of that conversation, she asked me, she said, honey, do you want me to stop doing it? And I said, no, I don't want you to stop. The fact of the matter was, I liked it. I just didn't know how to respond to it. And I said, I want to learn how to do it. Now, that was a big step for me, brother, to actually come right out in the open and say, I want to learn how to do it. So Carol became my hugging and kissing coach. And I came home from work the next day, and there she was warmly greeting me, threw her arms around me, and there I was like this, you know, standing there, not knowing how to respond. She says, honey, relax. So, you know, I kind of relaxed. Now put your arms around me. So I squeeze. Now, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I went through that process, and I learned how to become affectionate. And now over the years, it's gotten to the point where now I know Carol's heart so well that I know when she needs it. Now, we'll be sitting at home, and she'll be sitting in her chair, and I'll be sitting in mine, and there's just a sixth sense within me that she needs a hug and a kiss right now. So I'll get up out of my chair, I'll pull her out of her chair, we'll go sit on the couch, I'll put my arm around her, give her a squeeze and a kiss, and we'll just sit there with like that for 5-10 minutes. Yeah.
I'd like to turn the table on that here and say that I came from a family that was really affectionate, really open with that. And that's something that I did in my life, and just the opposite.
Yeah.
And I've been married for about a year and a half, and I've realized that I think I annoy her more than anything. When
yeah.
I just kiss her, and like you said, when she's doing the dishes or something, you just pop, turn her around and kiss them. She does that because, you know, she knows that I'll get mad probably if she doesn't, but she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And so,
does she know that this is something you need? And what I would do is I would figure out a way that you, to explain to her how you meet some needs that she has. Okay, you with me? Figure out some way to explain to her two or three things that you do for her that you know meets a need that she has. And then try to explain to her in a very loving way, honey, there is something that I need. Now, is it family background? Is that part of it? No, for you. Yeah, I mean, your whole family probably did it, huh? Yeah. And I'd explain all that to her and tell her that this is not something that is just a fad or a phase you're going through. This is something that you need. You need from her affection. And honey, would you think about really learning how to do that? Because what happened to me after I got the hang of it, I really enjoyed it.